Hello, my name is Tara, and you are listening to You Should Write a Book, the podcast. If this really was a book, this would be in the chapter called Being Polite, and this section would be called the second of three parts. In this episode, I do talk about abuse, so if you're not in a place to be able to hear that at this moment, I totally understand. I do suggest that before moving forward, you go back and listen to part one, as it sets the stage as we move from learning the lessons about being a good girl on to the consequences of such lessons. Join me, won't you? I was a good girl. I was such a good girl that whenever bad things happened to me, I internalized them fully, knowing that I was to blame. In my late teens, I had come to find that my body held a kind of power over men. I had it, and they wanted it. Unfortunately, that really wasn't power at all, but it was a trap that I fell into over and over again. Looking back, I think I learned to lead with my sexuality. What was really happening was that I was a naive little girl who always did as she was told, in a very grown-up and attractive package. On one hand, I was teeming with insecurities, devastated that I could no longer fit into a size 26 pair of jeans, but on the other hand, still finding ways to have men look at me with hunger. Of course, once I'd attracted them, I wasn't sure how to make them stay beyond a few makeout sessions in the dark, and I was desperate to make them stay. You'll remember that in the first of three parts in this series, I talked about being in the hospital for months on end as a very young child. What I learned there was they always leave. My mom would come to visit, but she always left. When my dad would come on occasion, he told me later that when I knew he was about to leave, I looked right through him and it broke his heart. To protect myself from the inevitable goodbye, I'd simply pretend he was no longer there. He began leaving Smarties on my pillow beside my head as he crept out of the room and crying in the hallway. But while I knew that he loved me, I also came to know that people who declared their love for me always left, and left me alone. How this came to manifest in my life was a desperate attempt to keep people in my life at all costs. I would give them anything I thought they wanted to make them stay. And once I had the body that was the object of desire, I gave them that as well. One of my favorite ever jobs was as a behavioral therapist in a group home for developmentally challenged adults. I'd begun volunteering with this population at the age of 14, so to get paid for doing it was fantastic. I worked in a lovely old brick house that backed onto a park, and we had six clients in total. My client was my heart. I loved her, and she loved me. I worked the day shift along with two other young women my age. At any given time, we needed at least three staff, as we always had to have two people to be available to do a physical restraint for when a client went off the rails and put others in danger. It was a busy place, and the staff were all young. One of the casual staff members was male, and males were in short supply in the field. I'd only worked with him on occasion. As a bunch of young people, we once adopted a stray cat. When we found that she was pregnant, we laid claim to one of the kittens each, and we named them all after alcohol. We had Jack Daniels, Malibu, Scotch, and for me, Tia Maria. So, of course, when we had a staff party, it involved a lot of alcohol. The only unusual thing about the party was the presence of this occasional staff member. He was the only male there aside from the partners of the female staff. Drinking, heavily at someone's house. My ride home left early, so I felt kind of stuck. I laid down on a couch to sleep for a while before calling a taxi. I woke up to this guy on top of me with his hands down my pants. I was on my period. He pulled out the tampon and, well, he raped me. I was pushing him with both hands to get his weight off of me, and I was crying and saying no over and over again. Minutes later, he was gone, and I lay on the couch, wondering if my blood had left a stain. I stumbled to the bathroom to clean up the mess, and there was a lot of mess. I stuffed handfuls of toilet paper in my underwear, and somehow I made it home. When I woke the next morning, I wept and wept and wept. I called one of the friends who'd been at the party the night before, and she said she had no idea where I'd gone. She thought that I'd left early. At some point during the next week, I went to my supervisor to tell her what had happened. What were you wearing? How much did you have to drink? Did you say no? Why didn't you scream? Did you flirt with him and make him think that you wanted to have sex with him? In retelling this story, of course, I have the same reaction as I hope most of you are having, the desire to yell at the supervisor, telling her to get her head on straight. Just for fun, ask one of your female friends or relatives how much they want to have sex when they're on their heaviest flow day and have no backup hygiene products on hand. But I shouldn't even have to clarify that. I said no, and that should have been enough. But sitting in my supervisor's office, I was shamed. I had done it. I was responsible. I was at fault for what I made him do. The lessons of my childhood were firmly in place. Be a good girl and always respect your elders. I let the matter drop. He continued to work there, but was never put on my shift again. Small consolation, I guess. And as an extra special bonus, 30 years later, he shows up on my Facebook page as a suggested friend. Yep, that's fun. Now I'm going to give you a high-level overview of an abusive relationship that I endured for almost 4 years. If you're not able to listen, once again, you can fast forward to the last 2 or 3 minutes to hear the wrap-up. I wanted to be taken care of. I was desperate for someone to love me in all of the romantic ways that you see in the movies, with flowers and I love yous and let's go out for dinner. I wanted to be cocooned and pampered, and I found it all in a karaoke bar. I was with my friend Diane, having beer and wings and singing my heart out. That was pretty good. I had a lot of fans. One night, an older gentleman came over to talk, and I let him. He said all of the right things and looked at me as if I was the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen. He gave me his number, and when I made it back home that night after the bars closed, I called him, and so it began. He was romantic. He lived in a 2-bedroom walk-up apartment not far from my parents' place. He brought me roses on the 17th of every month to mark our anniversary, and within a month I'd essentially moved in with him. He was 17 years older than me, and that represented security and stability. So I didn't mind his receding hairline or the fact that he had 3 kids. At the age of 22, I became a stepmom to kids I wasn't old enough to have given birth to. They were 10, 8, and 6. They came every other weekend, and they seemed to like me well enough. The first time I met his ex-wife, she looked at me sympathetically, and always treated me kindly. I came to a fundamental understanding. I didn't divorce her, and therefore, she and I were fine. Stephen love-bombed me. That wasn't a term that was used back then, and I only see it in retrospect. He became my whole world. We were never apart. When I went with a friend of mine to a gay bar, I thought it was romantic when he showed up to join us. When he called me in the middle of the night when I was working overnights in a group home, I thought it was because he missed me. We had date nights at home with a bottle of Zinfandel, caviar and cream cheese, and videos from Blockbuster playing on the VCR. We knew where all of the karaoke bars were on which nights, and we hit them all. He proudly looked on as I got standing ovations for singing From a Distance by Bette Midler or You're So Vain by Carly Simon. He wooed my mom and my sister, putting them at ease with gentle flirting. The sex was, well, great. He relished every part of my body, giving attention to parts of me that I didn't know I had. For as much as I thought that I was a woman of the world, I climaxed for the first time with him in a hotel room in Niagara Falls. I hadn't known what I'd been missing, but he made it his mission and he had succeeded. I received it as a gift. He understood that it was power. Which one of them do you want to fuck? The guy in the leather or the guy in the suit? Our karaoke nights had become a battleground. Suddenly, the attention that I garnered had given him much pride became a point of contention. But I was a good girl. I made myself smaller for him, ensuring that I didn't attract attention. The fights were epic. Him accusing, me denying, both drunk and dramatic, and always followed by sex, rougher than usual. He would smudge my lipstick off with his thumb and call me a whore, and I would desperately try to reassure him that I loved only him. In moments that I thought were sweet, he confessed to me his sins. He had been found guilty and convicted of lewd behavior, I think that was the term, because he'd been caught exposing himself to a young girl while sitting in his car. He wept. I consoled. Then he told me of his childhood and that his mom left and his dad was a drunk and that his older sister began having sex with him when he was just 11. That continued until he married at the age of 20. "You poor thing," I murmured. "How awful for you." There were so many points when I know I should have left. One of them was the one and only time I met his sister. He sat in a recliner, and she sat in his lap, giggling. You could cut the sexual tension with a knife. It was disgusting. The other time I should have left was when we visited his hometown near Kingston, and he tried to convince me to have sex with both him and his best friend. That ended with me getting in my Jeep to leave and him hopping in the passenger seat as I was pulling away. Should have left him there. Stephen was a collector. He considered himself a connoisseur of pornography. He had boxes and boxes of VHS tapes, all carefully labeled and lovingly looked after. I began to hate those boxes. He wanted me to join him in watching them, but I thought that was just gross. I hated coming home to find him naked and waiting in the bed, looking at me with hooded eyes, having just watched one of his favorite films. Somehow, I wanted to love him so well, to become so good at sex that he wouldn't need those tapes anymore. I was so naive. If only I did better. If only I was more beautiful. If only I was more sexy. If only I would have sex with him more than once a day, if only. In the early 1990s, cell phones weren't a thing. But Stephen was obsessed with all of the newest tech. I would find voice-activated recorders in the apartment so that he would know my every move when he wasn't home. When I found those and lost my temper, he put a baby monitor in the apartment with the receiver in the basement laundry room. He would tell me he was going to work, move his car, then sneak back into the basement to hear what I was up to. He would sit there for hours. Later, he would confront me about what I'd been doing in his absence, who I'd talked to, and what about. But see, he loved me so much, he was always thinking of me. It was almost 4 years later that I caught him. There was a small video recording from his video camera that he always had in hand. It was the type that you could insert into a specially made VHS tape. On it was recordings of his daughter's dance recital. She was almost 12. And a bunch of video from a day that we had spent at the water park. At first it seemed innocuous enough, until I saw that it was all of young girls coming down the water slides in their tiny bathing suits. Girls around 10 or 11 or 12, including his own daughters, zoomed in and focused. Beside this tape, there was another VHS tape, and I slid it into the VCR. To my horror, he had taken those images of those prepubescent girls and cut them with hardcore pornography. In an instant, so many things made sense in a brand new and very menacing way. The conviction for public exposure, having sex with his sister so young, the obsession with his video camera, the conversation we'd had where he said it would be okay if his daughters wanted to become porn stars. I'd been trying to convince myself all of this time that if I just loved him more, loved him better, been sexier, been more beautiful, that I would be enough. That day, I knew that I was more than enough, but not for him. It was time for me to leave. He had successfully isolated me from all of my friends, as abusers are wont to do. But when I put the call out, they all showed up with vans and cars and muscle. And the next day, by the time he got home from work, every trace of me was gone. No more being the good girl for me. Of course, the story doesn't end there. His ex-wife, the one who had always been so kind to me, the one who knew what I was living through, she and I plotted and planned about how to keep the girl safe from him. I don't think we were successful. And he stalked me for years. When I bought my first house, he began dating a woman two doors down from me. She had a 12-year-old daughter. I told her who he was and that she needed to be careful with him around. I stopped seeing his car parked in front of my house shortly after. The lessons I learned as a child are partially responsible for the mess I found myself in. First, my lesson from being in the hospital, that even people who say they love you leave. Therefore, you have to try everything you can to ensure that that doesn't happen. And second, be a good girl. If you attract attention because of your body, then you are responsible. And if that attention leads to some unwanted consequence, it's your fault. I had been a good girl, and I always respected my elders, but I was done. If you've made it this far along the journey with me, I thank you. Again, know that I'm okay, and this retelling of the story is helpful, and no longer snaps me back to that vulnerable place it once did. I have learned the lessons of my childhood so well, and I'd had the chance to live them in real time. Clearly, they didn't serve me well. So join me next time as I explore unlearning the lessons of being a good girl and always respecting my elders. And if you can, please share this podcast with your friends and consider subscribing to get notified when the next one gets posted. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Bye.